Does that look like it's recording?
Recording. Okay. So whenever this circle is solid, it's recording.
Oh, okay. There you go. All right.
Good afternoon. Thanks for showing up at this last talk of the day. We've heard lots of stuff today, so I'm glad to see that so many people have come out. I'd like to talk a little bit about what seems to be developing in language documentation as kind of a theory of language documentation. It seems that there's a developing consensus in the literature on language documentation that we need to think about the way that we structure our projects and the way that we develop our methodologies for language documentation. In particular, we are talking about ways that our documentation projects are usable by diverse audiences and for purposes that we might not realize when we first set out. And lots of the discussion about comprehensiveness and doing this kind of work points out the necessity of developing collaborative teams because a lot of the skills that we need to do a comprehensive language documentation project are beyond the skills that most rank and file linguists get in their graduate training in particular. And so as a result, collaboration is one of these key terms that we keep hearing in the literature. It's something that comes up in a lot of the best practices literature. But I want to investigate a little bit what collaboration can mean for a particular language documentation project. And the fact that most of the discussion on collaboration has focused on the relationship between researchers and communities. And there has been a little bit of discussion, but a lot fewer papers have been devoted to the relationships between scholars working together. So I'm hoping that today, by outlining some of the ways that researchers in other disciplines outside of linguistics have dealt with issues of collaboration, we might be able to develop a better model for some of the ways that we can collaborate with each other as we work on language documentation projects. First, I'd like to start by looking at the sciences, what sometimes we on the humanities and social sciences side call the hard sciences. But just taking a cursory look at the ways that researchers are involved in their projects, we can see that people involved in the hard sciences are much more involved in collaboration generally. Usually funding in the sciences supports very large research teams, and we can see from looking at citation frequencies and things like that, that co-authored papers often make a bigger impact than single-authored papers in sciences like physics and biology, chemistry, and such. Because the hard sciences also focus on empirical data and looking at problems, collaboration is really a key tool for them to be able to tackle these problems from various different angles. Because they focus on problems, specific problems often, it's easy for there to be a division of labor and also for the labor to be distributed, for laboratory conditions to be reconstructed, and for different stakeholders involved in the project to take little pieces of the project and work on it separately and put everything back together. And we also have the really interesting development as we look at things like Web 2.0, this trend of distributed cognition where we have people involved in software development or developments on the internet, where we have distributed cognition across a broad share of stakeholders, people who may not even meet each other, who are invested in these projects, who are able to advance the development of their research quite quickly in ways that we don't really see in the humanities. The humanities, by contrast, really don't have broad traditions of collaboration. Many of the disciplines of the humanities privilege this kind of singular great mind, and developing a career in the humanities often means building up a store of your own intellectual property on your own. Researchers in the humanities also often don't seem to be accountable for the research projects that they do outside of their often niche disciplines. We often hear about these great research teams of biologists whose discoveries have applicability outside of just biologists, whether it's applications in medicine or things that your kids might be taught in school. So researchers in the humanities don't have the same kind of outside pressures to get things right in the same way that some people working in the natural sciences might. Additionally, the kinds of research that people have done in the humanities often doesn't lend itself to the division of labor in the same way that we see in the natural sciences. It's often difficult to replicate the lab conditions that you might be involved in, say, if you were doing philological work or investigating the classics, for example. Additionally, many institutions actually do value co-authored works in tenure review and promotion. The weight of your publication history is decreased by working in teams often. And additionally, collaboration between junior and senior researchers is often to give novices new experiences in the field, to kind of induct them into the field, as opposed to use their new information, innovative techniques to enrich the collaborative project. This is something that's very different from what we see in the physical sciences and the natural sciences. And so because there's no culture of collaboration between junior and senior scholars, this kind of non-collaboration is calcified through the generations of scholars. So I think that if we look at linguistics, we see this kind of split internally. In some of the sub-disciplines like cognitive linguistics and psycholinguistics, there's a lot more co-authoring going on. But if you look at papers, say, in descriptive phonology or generative syntax, those kinds of collaborations are much more infrequent. But I would suggest that the data-driven orientation of documentary linguistics, the fact that we need to collect lots of data, we need to collect different kinds of data, and we need to have different people looking at it, really makes it imperative that we think about different ways of developing these kinds of collaborations. So one of the things that has come out in the last 10 years, as people have started to think about what it is to be involved in documentary linguistics, this idea of interdisciplinary collaboration comes up quite frequently. And in fact, it's one of the things that is often suggested that makes documentary linguistics different from the rest of our discipline. We have some funders, like the Volkswagen Stiftung's Dobez project, that really does prize interdisciplinary collaboration. And we hear lots of calls from people involved in language documentation for the death of the lone wolf linguist. And that's something that I think once people get out into the field and are involved in doing these big projects, they realize they can't do it on their own. And we can see now that this is kind of rippling throughout the rest of the discipline of linguistics. So I've identified five particular dimensions from looking at successful kinds of collaboration in the sciences and unsuccessful kinds of collaboration in the humanities. And I think that these five are important. Of course, these are not the only five things that we need to consider when we're developing a collaborative project. And I would also not suggest that these are chronological. It's not that we start at this one point and move through. But these are things that we need to keep in mind as we're developing collaborative projects. So the first is coordination. Peter Austin has written, I think in 2007, that one of the key skills that a linguist involved in a language documentation project should have is project management, And there are people who have taken issue with this, but having a central coordinator allows for a clarity of research goals and make sure that all of the people who are stakeholders in a particular project are on the same page. It also gives you a point of reference so that you have someone who is making sure that the goals of the project are being met and that the people who are involved in the collaboration are communicating with each other. And a coordinator also serves to clarify the nature of the collaboration. There are many different ways that we share as academics, that we support each other's work and get feedback from each other. But if we want to develop a successful collaboration for language documentation, we need to be very clear about the goals and the kinds of work and support that we can expect from our colleagues. Coordination also allows for us to explicitly talk about the division of labor in a particular collaboration for language documentation. And these kinds of division of labor can be made explicit through the management of virtual workspaces. Kablitz and her colleagues have written about their involvement in the development of the Lexis project as they were working on a lexical database of Marquesan. And in the development of that project, they were also able to manage virtual workspaces that allowed them to explicitly define the roles of the stakeholders involved in this project. We also have multiple models for different kinds of relationships for divisions of labor. And the first two are probably what we're most familiar with as we talk about language documentation. The employer-employee relationship could actually mimic or mirror the relationship that linguists often have with their informants or their consultants. The teacher-apprentice is also something that we see very similar to the relationship between junior and senior researchers. But the peer working together, peer similar and peer different, requires us to think about different kinds of investments that peer researchers need to make into a particular documentation project. Peer similar could be people working within the same discipline, and peer different could be people working in different disciplines. It could be people working across the humanities or linguists working with an ethnobotanist, for example. But these two require lots of communication, and in particular, especially working with peer different collaborators, requires us to think about getting some education in what your co-collaborator is contributing to the project. So it requires a little bit of communication back and forth, and also additional education. One of the things that has been very clear, especially as linguists have been more interested in documenting and archiving their work, is the necessity of standards for interoperation. Interoperation is the ability for data to interact with each other and for people using the data to be able to understand and make them portable. Bird and Simon's 2003 paper has now kind of become a classic these last 6 years, but they talk about these dimensions of portability. They're mostly talking about the ability for electronic data to be usable in different formats. We have several different communities who've been involved in developing standards. We have the Open Language Archive community. We have another, like GOLD, the General Ontology for Language Description, I think it is. And these are communities of stakeholders who are involved in this ongoing discussion of how we can develop standards for language description and language documentation that make the data and the products of our documentation available to other people and possibly people generations beyond us. We have examples of linguists working on wiki grammars. We have conventions like Leipzig glossing conventions. And we also have cross-disciplinary education. All of these things kind of allow us to create a more level field for understanding what our co-collaborators are involved in. One of the kind of lingering cultural pieces from the humanities that's something that is constantly has constantly been undergoing review is this issue of authorship and authority. This is something that is important very broadly when we talk about the relationships between researchers and communities and intellectual property. This is also something that's important when we talk about the relationships between scholars working on a documentation project. There are many scholars who are moving to make their work more available through things like Creative Commons. We have the Journal Language Documentation and Conservation that's published here that makes all of the content available through Creative Commons licenses. And we see lots more people involved in language documentation looking for more open source software platforms to make the tools of our documentation more readily available to lots of people. But the issue of copyright and intellectual property is something that's ongoing and something that definitely needs to be considered in developing a documentation project. The issue of distributed knowledge, if we have stakeholders who are dispersed across disciplines and across distance, how do we quantify the kinds of contributions that we're making to a particular documentation project? And this is important because institutions look at our contributions as they reward our participation in this academic enterprise. So as I mentioned, in the humanities commonly, collaboration is not rewarded in the same way that it is in the natural sciences. So the institutional orientation away from collaboration is something that we have to consider as a discipline more broadly. And finally, the results of our collaboration. If we are going to publish these results or somehow otherwise make them available, whose name goes on it? And that's an issue. And I know it's an issue for people like me who are graduate students, especially when we consider things like doing a documentation project as our PhD research. Often we're not doing this stuff alone, but to actually get it to count as a PhD, you have to be the person who's leading this research. So there's been a lot of discussion about how institutions can recognize documentation work and how institutions can recognize collaboration. But this is an ongoing discussion, and I think it's something that you have to think about when you're starting to develop a documentation project. And the final dimension that I'd like to discuss is the concept of feedback. When we look at models of development of computer software, for example, or things like the Linux operating system, one of the things that really sticks out, especially in comparison to work in the humanities, is that there's ongoing feedback. There are helplines, there are places for you to have a forum to talk about your issues with a particular software platform. And I think language documentation would also benefit from attention to how to collect feedback. I think in comparison to some of the other sub-disciplines of linguistics and definitely the humanities more broadly, language documentation, because of our orientation and concern with not only producing data, but also producing data that are usable for a wide variety of people, requires us to think about ways that we can get feedback on what we're producing. So an ongoing assessment of the meaning, value, and the significance of the collaboration, not only for those who are producing the products, but also for those who will use them eventually. And of course, as I mentioned, feedback from the institutions, thinking about the ways that institutions can interact with this new really requirement of language documentation to be multidisciplinary and to be collaborative at every step. And I would suggest that language documentation is a new kind of humanities. And because we're interested in data, we have to think about new structures for evaluating the development of our research. I think that it will require planning at institutional levels, both at department levels and university levels, and often beyond that. And this issue of whether or not a documentation is ever completed, I've heard a lot of people so far in the conference say, no, it's never completed, it's life's work. And for someone who's starting a graduate program, for example, that can be really daunting and scary, especially when you just want to finish your thesis. But there's another way to look at that. If you're working with people, if you have a team, and if that team is always growing, and if you have people who are interested coming at the language or the particular community from lots of different positions, that's actually encouraging and exciting. But that crucially requires a change in culture. We can't think about the lone wolf anymore. So I think that language documentation, as it calls for the death of the lone wolf linguist going out into the field on their own, snatching things and running away, thinking about a whole pack, and the way that a pack works is that the participants, maybe not the pack, but the idea of us working together and working as a group that has a singular mind in some ways. The data-centered orientation of documentary linguistics underscores the need for better data. And better data doesn't necessarily mean better than the linguists at the university next door, but better data that is that's available and answers questions that we never thought to ask. And the only way that we're able to develop that kind of data is through alliances rather than competition. So that's it. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much for sorting this out in a very nice and beautiful way to start with. It's really, I fully agree with most points, really. The one thing I have a certain problem with is your maybe somewhat too bright feature of what's happening in the hard sciences. And connected with that, the not at all touching on the issue of hierarchy in collaboration, right? I mean, hard science collaboration is based on a very, very strict hierarchy. There's usually the big man, sometimes a big woman, and they say what's happening, right? And there is no collaboration in terms of, I mean, there's been a long history now of funding agencies and universities trying to get recognition for the work of the more junior people in these teams, and there's some procedure in place, but the basic fact is that it's still a very, very hierarchical thing, and one of the problems of collaboration in the humanities is that there is not such a clear basis for hierarchy there, especially in collaboration between people in, like, people who are already, or among PhD students, or among professors at universities, etc. And I think that's an issue one would have to think over a bit more. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. This was kind of a short description from afar of what's going on in the hard sciences. There's actually quite a lot of literature on the sociology and the power dynamics between researchers in the hard sciences. So I don't mean to suggest that everything is flat there. But I think that the fact that people are looking at the hierarchical relationships in those kinds of collaboration is really encouraging, because I don't think that we're doing that in the same way in documentary linguistics yet. I think you're definitely right. I think that there are definitely problems in the kinds of recognition that junior researchers get. But I think that that's part of their ongoing discussion as well. And I hope that it would be part of ours. Thank you.
Other questions? Surely there's comments. I'm missing someone. Hi. Okay.
Yeah, this concerns the point of authors and authorship or whatever, quote. As you clearly said, concerning your PhD, you should be the person that identifies the work. But if you're talking about documentation, where you call for interdisciplinary participation, how then do you present the authors of the work? Do you put them as collaborators, or you who initiated the entire project comes up as the publisher? I want a clarification on the justification why you should think the other members shouldn't feature as collaborators or partakers in that entire project, but just some particular individuals. And how do you classify those that are supposed to be considered as the principal contributors in that project and the others kept aside?
Okay. Thank you. I think that what I was talking about in terms of the PhD is the situation as it stands. You have to be the primary author of your PhD thesis. But I think that working on language documentation, and especially interdisciplinary work, as people are working on different aspects of the community, the language, culture, they have the opportunity to publish singularly or jointly. So for example, in my work, I'm working with an ethnomusicologist as well. And so the things that I'm looking at in this particular situation are very different from what she's looking at. I think that our work interacts with each other in ways that enriches both of our work, but she's publishing in ethnomusicology journals, for example. But I do think that that's an important point, especially because we have a lot more students in linguistics, for example, that are working on language documentation projects as kind of their primary research for their thesis. I know for myself that I am doing lots of linguistic analysis, but I wouldn't be able to do it without the people in the community that I'm working with. And they have a lot of linguistic information themselves without having the benefit of training at a PhD level that they've brought to my own research. So I think that having that ongoing discussion, especially at an institutional level, of exactly what it means to be involved in this kind of research, language documentation research, and the connection between language documentation and, say, a PhD thesis, is something that we have to address. And I know here at UH it's something that we've been talking about. We haven't resolved it, but it's definitely something that's important for us to think about. Thank you. Thank you. I think that that is related to one of the dimensions, the idea of the division of labor and being very clear about what the goals are for a particular project. And one of the issues that we keep seeing in language documentation and the discussion of this kind of new discipline is people feel like it's too overwhelming. We heard Dr. Newman yesterday talk about how it's too big for us to do. But I think that one of the things that we crucially have to think about is exactly what you're saying. Thinking of the documentation as a series of projects in particular. And if we're clear about the division of labor and who might be the lead author on a certain aspect of the documentation output, I think that we might be able to reconcile some of those issues. That's a good question. I think when I was trying to develop these concepts, of course it depends very much on the particular project that you're working on. But the idea was, Peter Austin's suggestion was that linguists need to be project managers. And he was actually here at UH and suggested that, and everyone kind of groused at that. But this idea that there should be someone, it could be multiple persons, who are involved in kind of figuring out what everybody's doing in the field, so that people aren't just kind of saying, I'm an ethnomusicologist, and I'm a botanist, and I'm going out and collecting things, but also someone who is actively making sure that those connections are being made while the research is being done. And that's something that the researchers need to work out for themselves. It depends on the funding, it depends on the support from their institutions. But for example, the coordinator could be the primary investigator, or the principal investigator. It depends on the particular situation. But that I don't want to say that this is a best practice or anything, any kind of recommendation, but just issues for us to think about as we're developing our projects.
Any other questions? No? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I encourage you all to head to the plenary talk.
Thank you.
It's all I can do now to weigh in on this. Having just written an article, it's in the international, I don't know if you saw it, but it's on community collaborations, basically, but it also talks about building teams and among researchers. We've had a language documentation project, three of us from the university, me and two graduate students, and a team of four from the community. We published an article together, and I put everyone's name on it. My graduate students both got docked in their first year jobs because there were too many options. So it's common. So what you're saying, I mean, you know, we have plenty of evidence that this is happening, and
yeah,
something has to change. I just don't know how you get Are you going to
the institutional, whatever, the powers that need to come in?
Yeah, and that's something that we've been really dealing with here at UH, because so many of our students are involved in language documentation here, and we realize that you can't just pretend like these people aren't contributing. You can't do that. Yeah.
No. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.